mankind needs to move forward, you know, and we're not going to be moving forward so long as NASA keeps us living in this fantasy world.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Lord of America!
These guys are not going to deter me from completing my objective, and that's proving beyond a shadow of a doubt that the moon missions were faked, and I've, you know, it's an ongoing battle to the finish, I guess, and I'm going to continue doing it until I either die or NASA publicly acknowledges that the moon missions were faked. You know, I am not afraid to die for the sake of the truth, and if I have to put my life on the line just to get to the truth, then so be it. It's going to be quite a show, I can promise you that.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. Lots of in-house notes to discuss, but we're going to save those for the end of the program because I don't want to bore people who've been waiting way too long for this episode, and in the future, these in-house notes will make no sense at all. So tune in to the end of the program if you want to find out what's going on with these technical difficulties we've had the last few weeks. And before we dive into this week's edition of the program, of course, we got to give kudos and thanks to Peter Diggins, who supplied the theme music for this week's installment of BOA Audio. You can find out more from him at www.aurophonic.com, and that's spelled AUROPHONIC.com. If you're a musician out there and you want to contribute a song to BOA Audio for a future installment of the program, you can do that by writing to boaaudio@hotmail.com, and I'd be happy to give your tunes a listen. Now, let's get down to business on this edition of BOA Audio as we return to the realm of the moon hoax theory with our guest Jera White, known as the grandson of moon hoax theory. Chances are, if you listen to this, you've heard a lot of paranormal audio over the years, and you've heard the moon hoax theory discussed and dissected countless times. I know I have. So I went into this conversation with Jera White with a whole different perspective. I really wanted to explore the world of moon hoax theory. How did it start? How did it evolve? And why is it so potent on both sides of the argument? Those are sort of the areas we're going to be covering here in this conversation. Jera is going to tell us about the man who really kicked off moon hoax theory, Bill Kaysing, and then the man who he turned the baton over to, Ralph René, and how those two men led to Jera White becoming the grandson of the moon hoax theory. We're going to really get into what is, I think, one of the most fascinating aspects of the moon hoax theory, and that is the passionate stances taken by both sides of the moon hoax debate, the people who insist we went to the moon and the folks who are adamant that we did not. They are both just fired up about their sides in this argument, more so than almost any other paranormal genre. So that's fascinating to me, and we're going to explore that with Jera White, because really he has become the face and voice of moon hoax theory here in the new millennium. Speaking of these vitriolic stances from both sides of the moon hoax debate, we're going to hear about Jera's encounters with Phil Plate, the Mythbusters, and Buzz Aldrin. He's confronted all these folks with serious questions about the moon landing, and you're going to find out about how those encounters went down. We're also going to explore conspiracies surrounding the Apollo 1 and Challenger shuttle disasters, and we'll get into the meta levels of the moon hoax theory debate, including why in 2011, whether or not we went to the moon still matters. Why is this a huge issue anymore? It was 40 plus years ago. We're going to get into all that, plus tons and tons more, really a slew of challenging questions covering this most peculiar genre of esoterica. It really is one of the more odd corners in the world of the paranormal, and altogether it is an edition of BOA Audio that takes a fair look at an often dismissed and highly controversial area of the paranormal with the man who has championed it here in the new millennium, Jera White. Before we get to Jera's bio and background, I want to give props to Michael, a BOA Audio listener who wrote to us last year and suggested we have Jera on the program. As we say all the time here on the show, it is your program, my friends. BOA Audio belongs to the listeners, and once again, the influence of the audience is on display here with this installment of BOA Audio. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Jera White, allow me to provide you with a little background on him. Jera White is a native of Australia who debunks the Apollo hoax debunkers, both in forums and through film. He holds academic qualifications in film and TV at Sydney Institute of TAFE and is currently doing his BSc in astrophysics. Since 2006, he has produced over 300 videos on the subject of the Apollo moon hoax theory. These include the ongoing Moon Faker series, Flagging the Gems, and Apollo Zero. He is the contributing editor to MoonMovie.com and is considered by many to be the honorary heir of Ralph René, author of NASA Mooned America. He's got a new website coming out soon, maybe online by now. You can find that at www.moonfaker.com. And you can check out a slew of his films at his YouTube channel, youtube.com/WhiteJera, and you spell that White, W-H-I-T-E, and then J-A-R-R-A-H. Links all over Banal of America, so be sure to check out his films on YouTube. And with all that said, let's get down to business, my friends, and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on March 26, 2011. Jera White, direct from Sydney, Australia, talking about the moon hoax theory on BOA Audio Season 6. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. And I'm sure we're about to embark on what is certainly going to be a controversial episode in a lot of ways, but I'm personally really looking forward to this conversation. Our guest calls himself the grandson of moon hoax theory, and we'll get into that sort of affectation, if you will, in a little bit, but I really think that that is certainly very apropos because he's really carrying on the tradition of moon hoax theory now. He certainly seems like the third generation of researchers here to really be a proponent of the moon hoax theory and challenge the mainstream perception of what happened there in the late 1960s. And he's doing a fantastic job of it, I'll give him that. Personally, I'm not a huge proponent of the moon hoax theory, but I leave the door open for it, and that's why we're having this conversation here on the show, and especially because I'm very interested in the moon hoax theory community and how this field has evolved over the years. And as I said, he really is sort of the cutting edge of moon hoax theory right now. He is the driving force behind the field in a big way, and he's really changed the way moon hoax theory is showcased with his amazing YouTube channel. You can find that at youtube.com/WhiteJera. And actually, I should point out, too, that he is a guest who was requested by one of the BOA Audio listeners. So as we like to say from time to time here on the program, you know, you call out for the guests and we'll bring them on the program to showcase their work and talk about their research. I've been sitting back and enjoying a lot of his films here for the better part of the last couple of days. There's like over 400 movies on his YouTube channel, not just dealing with the moon hoax theory, but dealing with other stuff as well. And really fantastically produced stuff. I got to give him credit for that. I mean, these are things that you could easily imagine seeing on television. They're very well made, so kudos to him. I'm talking about Jera White coming to us all the way from Sydney, Australia, 15 hours ahead of us. Hopefully tomorrow is looking good already. And I'm looking forward to talking to him and having him here on the program and delving into the moon hoax theory. And I hope all you folks out there are going to come along for the ride as well. Jera, welcome to BOA Audio. It's a real thrill to have you on the program.
It's good to be here. So on.
Well, let's start out with the bio, the background. You know, who is Jera White and how did you get turned on to the moon hoax theory?
Well, when I was a young kid, you know, I was always interested in space and you know, space travel, exploration, that sort of stuff. And you know, I kept studying it well into my teenage years and stuff. And you know, ultimately, I wanted to be an astronaut. You know, someday I wanted to be the first man on Mars. You know, because I looked up to these astronauts. You know, these guys who were, you know, said to have been the guys who went to the moon and all that. You know, and you know, I studied the Apollo program. I studied the solar system, the galaxy, and everything else. But a few years later, much later in my life, I see this program about how you know, how they're saying that, the moon missions were faked. And we all say, oh, this is interesting. This is interesting. Could this be true? So what I did, initially I took it with a grain of salt, right? But I went back to everything I had previously learned about astronomy and astrophysics and stuff. And, I read into the books, the various videos and stuff that the conspiracy theorists were putting out. And, along the way, obviously as well, I came across all these pro NASA websites. Mm-hmm. And, what became pretty clear to me is that, compared to everything I knew, everything I'd learned since and so forth, it became pretty clear to me that these pro NASA websites were essentially just propaganda sites. They, rather than actually disprove the argument, they bombard their readers with this pseudoscience garbage, and in turn as well, they also go out of their way to libel the other side of the argument. They go out to libel those on who were saying that this was all fake. By putting words in their mouth or lying about their background and all this diatribe that's going on. And so I finally felt, look, it's time for some guy to, stand up, and finally show what these propagandists really are. They're just that. They're just propagandists. Because that's all they ever say on the internet, is just propaganda. And so initially I started writing up this enormous long essay, that I was going to be like posting on the Bill Kesing tribute site, this long essay countering the thing, right? And when I finally worked in it for about a year or so, and when I finally finished, I'm like, well, this thing's like, bigger than a phone book.
Yeah.
And plus I also needed to turn back on some less than polite things I had to say about the opponents, obviously. But so eventually I decided, look, why don't you just start take various pieces of it and just adapt it into a video. Originally it was going to be one long video, but then I realized that would take way too long to cover in just one single film. So what became of that became the Moonfaker series. Just each series like delves into a specific topic, be it radiation or be it television broadcasts or lighting or whatever and stuff. And so it's pretty much how the Moonfaker series came about.
Okay, so you sort of got into this like in the last like 5 years or so, basically.
Yeah, I first got involved in the first Moonfaker came out in 2006, and I've been producing these videos since then, shortly after the release of my first series, the lads from moonmovie.com, they saw my films and they said, hey, how would you like to come work with us? They had a project that they were working on and stuff, and they asked, hey, would you like to help us put this together? And I said, okay. And so that project was Apollo Zero, which is a public domain film. And over that time, I also worked on the GEM series, which was basically there was Flagging the Gems, and there was Apollo 11, the little gem, which was the former of which was this video that was proving that the Apollo 10 telecast. This was the mission before Armstrong's. They supposedly went to the moon to try out the lunar module and stuff. And
yeah.
During that mission, they sent back a whole bunch of television transmissions showing the Earth viewed from a distance and stuff. Well, I got the raw footage of this. It was sold by the group Spacecraft Films and stuff. And what I did, I compared it to the official transcript. And what it turned out is that the actual supposed live television transmissions and all that, they were in fact edited, pre-filmed and edited together. Because there'd be times when they're like looking back at the Earth, okay, they're just like commenting on it and stuff. Then all of a sudden, the camera would just cut from one angle to another. Like, okay, it would be sort of zoomed out away from the Earth, and suddenly would cut to a closer image or slightly off center image or whatever and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the audio would still run continuous, unedited, uninterrupted, I should say. So basically the audio was synced to this edited footage. They only had one TV camera in the capsule, right? So there's no possible way that could happen. So I produced this video Flagging the Gems, and I posted it up on my old YouTube account. My old YouTube account was Dara White, It's now White Dara. But see, what happened is that when I posted this video, I also pointed out that pieces of existing Apollo 10 footage had been omitted from the so-called complete and unedited Spacecraft Films DVD.
And so I posted this video basically pointing this out. And what happened, the guy who runs Spacecraft Films, a guy called Mark Gray, he went in and filed copyright infringement against this video that I put out and got my account suspended, my old account. And, you know, his copyright claim is fraudulent because the footage in question is public domain. He's got no copyright claim to it.
Weird. Mm. Well, that just goes to show you how intense this moon hoax debate is. You kind of alluded to it earlier. It's just, it's vitriolic on both sides. It's very remarkable how passionate both sides of the moon hoax debate are. It's very interesting in that way.
I guess so. Of course, you start to get really, really hostile people who just go out and just go nuts on you. Recently one guy went as far as photoshopping pictures of his opponents, pictures of the moon hoax conspiracy theorists, including myself. You know, in very antagonizing ways. Like one of them went as far as putting my face onto a vagina. I kid you not.
What?
That's how
oh my
that's how
God.
These blokes are.
That's
yeah.
just weird. Oh boy.
Yeah.
I don't know. That says more about him than you, so I wouldn't take it personal. Now you call yourself the grandson of the moon hoax theory. So talk a little bit about the evolution of this whole thing. You know, where it started, how it started, and how it ended up, you know, sort of in your hands. You're kind of the caretaker of the moon hoax theory nowadays. And as I said earlier, you've taken it sort of into this new generation, and especially with the YouTube work that you're doing. I mean, that's the cutting edge, really, of sort of esoterica right now in a lot of ways. And I think that's how you've really done a great job of positioning yourself and sort of breathing new life into the moon hoax theory. So, I mean, talk about how it got to this point, though, as far as the moon hoax theory itself.
Okay, well, in the beginning, right, this is basically, this is way back in the 50s. Bill Kaysing, he was working at Rocketdyne, which was one of the companies that designed and built the engines for the Saturn rocket. And evidently the space race began, you know, with Sputnik and all that. And so during the 1960s, he worked at Rocketdyne between the late 50s and early 1960s. And in 1961, right, a clandestine organization called Apollo Simulation Project was formed, you know, by NASA and the Defense Intelligence Agency and stuff. And, you know, Bill Kaysing, because he was very involved in at Rocketdyne, he worked as a service engineer and analyst and stuff. You know, he was like checking over all the engines prior to launch and testing and whatever and stuff. And so, basically, he was very aware of this organization, which they were basically proposing all these ideas on how they could go about simulating flights to the moon and purport them to be the real thing. You know, one of them was basically to have the astronauts, okay, go up the elevator, go into the capsule, and then come back down the elevator again, you know, and just launch the capsule unmanned. And during this time, all the information, there will be voices and videos and so forth, they all came from pre-recorded tapes that were then relayed over the landlines to the guys at Houston. You know, the guys at Houston, they don't really need to know or care where the data comes from. You know, they just, okay, here it is, it's coming from NASA's manned space flights, and okay, well, must be true then. You know, that's the way they operated and stuff.
Right.
Anyways, Kaysing, he was aware of all these proposals, right, but he left before the actual faking took place. And, you know, he avoided, you know, he didn't pay that much attention to the subsequent moon landings and that sort of stuff, because, like, you know, he just couldn't you know, generate enthusiasm for watching a phony project, you know, pulled off. You know, so he didn't watch the first moon landing or anything like that. And some years later, right, because, like, he was very he had a habit of, like, bringing homeless people to his houseboat and stuff, you know, just to accommodate, you know, the homeless and stuff.
Yeah.
And one of them was this fellow by the name of John Grant, who was this former Vietnam veteran, right? And basically he had, you know, regrets about going into war and stuff. And so one night he and Bill Kaysing were, like, talking, and he's like, "Bill, I was conned into believing what I did was patriotic, you know, but it was all bullshit." And he says, "Why don't you blow the whistle on this rotten, corrupt government?" And he's speaking in satirical terms, right? He says, "Why don't you say something outrageous like we never went to the moon?" You know, he was, you know, Grant was still talking about doing a satirical project, but, you know, Casing, because of his inside knowledge and stuff, he also recently learned about Thomas Ronald Barron, who was the safety inspector, who was, you know, saw all the poor workmanship, all the design and safety violations and stuff that went into the Apollo 1 capsule. And after he testified after the fire about how bad things were, he was found dead in a car accident. You know, Casing had recently learned about this bloke, and you know, John Grant, he comes up and he says, why don't you do the satirical project, say, hey, why don't you say we never went to the moon and stuff. Well, Grant, he was obviously talking about doing a spoof, but Casing ultimately decided to do a serious project, you know, because of his inside knowledge and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And so he began writing a book. The book was called We Never Went to the Moon, which basically discussed all these proposals that the Apollo simulation project had discussed during his time at Rocketdyne. And so basically you could call him the Apollo whistleblower, I guess, if you like, but most people refer to him as the father of the moon hoax theory. Now, his book, it was very well done, you know, but it was mostly about all the proposals and stuff like that. He delved into very little photographic anomalies or any of the science stuff. Well, of course, he did discuss the F1 engine problems and all that sort of stuff. But the another bloke by the name of Ralph Rene, he was an ex-member of Mensa, you know, the High IQ Society.
Yeah.
He was a self-taught engineer. Of course, he did do college and stuff, but, you know, just didn't finish to get degrees and stuff. But, you know, he was very gifted. You know, he managed to get into Mensa, which, you know, that requires IQ in the top 2%. Anyways, he was contacted. This was in the 80s, I think. He was contacted by the Rand Corporation for any free ideas that he may have on space travel. You know, like, hey, do you have any free ideas for poor old NASA? And, okay, so basically he wrote, because he had a couple of patents, you know, so he wrote up some ideas, you know, for space travel. I don't know what they were exactly, but basically he wrote up a few ideas, and he sent them out to the Rand Corporation. They never wrote back to him. They never said thank you or anything like that. But a few years later, after that, right? This was before he started doubting the moon missions, right? He was a believer back then, mm-hmm. And you know, they contacted him basically asking him for free ideas and stuff like that. And so basically, a few years after he sent out those ideas, he picks up on Bill Casing's book, and, you know, he starts to wonder. He also picked up on another bloke's book by the name of William Bryan. Bryan, he didn't doubt the moon missions, but he did point out various anomalies. But his belief in Apollo led him to wrong conclusions. Like, he saw the flag and he said, oh, the moon must have an atmosphere then, or the astronauts aren't jumping very high. Okay, they must have strong gravity then. But basically that opened his eye up to various anomalies and stuff, Rene's eyes to anomalies. And so a few years later, this is, I think this was in 1990, I think, but he receives this glossy booklet from the government printing office, America at the Threshold, it was called, which was basically this idea for this thing called Project Outreach, which was basically a manned mission to Mars, you know, basically proposing this stuff. And basically this thing was a propaganda booklet, you know, basically talking about this NASA's upcoming trip to Mars, which was only gonna cost them like $1 trillion. Now, he looked at this thing and he's like, $1 trillion? And so, anyways, he's just reading through this, you know, looking through the drawings and stuff. He gets to page A51 in the appendix, right? And, you know, which is basically a whole list of names of all the contributors, you know, everyone who, like, sent them ideas. And he finds his name smack dead in the middle of this booklet, which is basically a propaganda, you know, leaflet thing, basically telling people about how we're going to be going to Mars next and stuff.
Weird.
And so basically, this means basically that one of his ideas that he sent to the Rand Corporation got approved. And so now they were using him like he was one of their supporters, you know, they were using his name like that. And so finally, you know, sort of angered by them using his name for something that he no longer believed in. You know, if you're not going to be able to get to the moon, how are you going to get to Mars and stuff? You know, and so he began looking through he went to the library, picked up all these books written by these Apollo astronauts and stuff, like some of their statements were just contradictory, and some of the photos, they just didn't add up. And so finally he picked up some other books written by various, various scientists, you know, like James Van Allen, for example. He wrote a few magazine articles and stuff. In the beginning, Van Allen was saying that the radiation was deadly for humans, the radiation of the radiation belts. You know, there's radiation belts that encircle the Earth. And in the beginning, he was saying that, oh, this stuff is deadly. We're not being able to get through there because shielding is beyond engineering feasibility and stuff. You know, he also picked up on other science books, you know, like one by Prospects for Interstellar Travel, which was by a guy called John H. Molden, who was an astrophysicist for NASA. He was proposing 2 meters of shielding to protect humans against the radiation of solar flares and radiation belts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so basically, he was basically reading through all these books, jotting down footnotes, information, you know, all this dirt that he picked up on NASA and stuff. Once he's finally done reading all this stuff, he contacts Bill Kasing and he says, look, Bill, this is what I got on NASA. Here's all the dirt that I've got, blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's all that. And Bill, he was impressed by this, and he says, well, why don't you write it into a book? If you do, I'll publish it. Okay. And so he writes up a book called A Funny Thing Happened Under the Way to the Moon. That was the working title. The finished title was NASA Moon to America, right, which is considered by many to be the most comprehensive book on this whole conspiracy thing. And so basically he wrote it up and then he sent it off to Bill Kasing to publish it, but Bill's wife got sick, and you know, instead of using the money to publish the book, he used it to pay for medical bills and stuff like that. And so really he turned to some other guy, a guy called Jim Collier. He was going to publish it, but you know, the publication date kept getting pushed back and back again and again and again. And so finally he published the book himself. And so I guess you could call him the father of the moon hoax, because like Bill Kasing was evidently the grandfather, and Renee, he basically the next generation up. And so finally, you know, when I began my investigation into this whole moon landing stuff, I managed to get in touch with Ralph Renee, you know, and he granted me interviews over the phone and sent me a whole. Basically stacks of his papers and you know, basically all this information on Apollo and stuff like that, all these videos that he had, all these papers and stuff.
Yeah.
Basically he left everything to me and stuff. Some people have considered me Rene's heir, because like, you know, I went out of my way to defend him a lot, you know, from these propagandists on the internet and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, I made sure his research was out there. Yeah, because like, his book surprisingly didn't get as much attention as most of the propaganda stuff that's on the internet. Most of them, before I came out, most of them didn't even read his book. You know, they only knew his research from the few interviews he had given on the television and stuff.
Right, right. And how other people like picked up aspects of his argument and used them. For the moon hoax. I heard.
Yeah, exactly.
Segments.
Half of them didn't even hear the name.
I've heard it, segments, you know, of interviews with him where he just points out that, you know, a lot of the moon hoax theory is just people using what's in his book. You know, so I can see how you are the heir in a way, as you say, because if he left all this stuff to you, he passed away in December of 2008, you're sort of carrying on his legacy. Yeah. And like I said, you're the third generation of this. What's Bart Sobrell then? Sort of like the wacky uncle?
Well, there were two. The Bart Sobrell, he came along and he certainly helped get the moon hoax attention in the TV media, I guess. But he never really took on an official title and stuff. But because I believe he only knew Kasing and Renee during the production, because like he actually interviewed the two guys during the production of A Funny Thing Happened Under the Way to the Moon.
Yeah.
You know, originally it was just going to be a film about, okay, maybe how this might have been a hoax and stuff like that, but then later on he picks up this footage and stuff, and this footage basically showing that the Apollo 11 mission was faked, where they were putting a transparency over the window, a transparent picture of the Earth over the window, letting the light from the outside shine through, making it look as though it's the Earth far away when they turn the capsule interior lights out and stuff.
Yeah.
And so basically he included that footage in his book. That he produced another film as well, Astronauts Gone Wild, in which he interviewed or encountered, you know, most of them were like you know, speaking at public places and stuff, basically, in which he tries to get the astronauts to swear on a Bible and stuff.
Oh, yeah, everybody knows about his run-in with Buzz Aldrin, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I actually met Buzz Aldrin just a few months ago, as a matter of fact, so anyway, Sobral, he produced these videos. He later released the footage that he received on another DVD as well. But he retired from the moon hoax thing about a few years ago in I think it was 2006, I believe it was. And basically, shortly after that, I was approached by the lads from moonmovie.com, and they said, would you like to join our little team? And I said, okay, sure. And that's how that went about, I guess. So in the beginning, MoonMovie.com was promoting purely Sobral's work and stuff, but now the site is mostly moon hoax in general, not just Sobral's work, but also David Percy's work, Jim Collier's work, Ralph Renée's work, obviously, Bill Casing's, and of course they've got links to all my various moon faking videos and stuff. So
Sobral retired?
Yeah, he retired a while back. Yeah.
Interesting. Did he give any reason, or was it just sort of?
I'm not sure the reason why, but I don't delve into other people's personal reasons and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
My style.
Yeah. No, I just was wondering if he, you know, made a statement that he was retiring, or he just sort of decided not to pursue it anymore, or what. That's all. Very interesting. Okay, so that's sort of how it led up to you sort of carrying on this tradition, and you make a good, interesting point here that Casing sort of laid out sort of the idea, and Renée sort of filled in a lot of the details, if you will. Is that kind of how it shook out over the years?
Yeah, pretty much. Basically, Casing, he was the guy who blew the whistle on the Apollo simulation project. Renée came along and backed up most of what he said with technical data and scientific research and stuff like that. And then I came along and basically helped, you know, get their work out and, you know, pick up on more lot more of the current stuff. Because, like, if you understand, like, they wrote their books. One of them, the first one was written in the 70s. Renée's book was written in the 90s. Of course, it received a few updates here and there, you know, as the years went by. But my series, gets all their information out to the next generation and picks up on all the new information of this generation right now. You know, like, there's been a whole lot of new stuff that's been popping up lately and stuff. You know, like the Smart One crashing into the moon and finding out that the minerals, the actual rocks that are actually up there on the moon are different to the ones that we have, you know, from the Apollo missions. You know, like, if you go to the moon, pick up a moon rock, and then you send a probe to crash there and pick up moon dust for you to analyze, you'd expect to get the same results, yet the stuff that's actually up there is different.
So that's sort of like a new development in moon hoax research.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of new developments coming up, and there's a whole lot of new stuff that I've been meaning to discuss. But regrettably, I've been, you know, a little sidetracked lately. What with the with propagandists constantly, you know, releasing all this bullshit on the internet and stuff. So, you know, like, okay, this is back in 2008. You know, I just released my radioactive anomaly film, and I was working on Moonfaker Exhibit D, which was a film about the moon rocks and laser reflectors and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Renée, he passed away. You know, he committed suicide.
He committed suicide.
So as you might already be aware, see, Renée, he was a he worked for many years hard labor. You know, like as a construction worker and stuff like that. And he basically did both his knees in and stuff with arthritis. And you know how bad the Medicare is in the United States. He couldn't get health coverage. He couldn't get the operations. They subjected him to pre-operation stress tests that an Olympic athlete with a strained walker couldn't pass, let alone a man on a walker. And, you know, that's the way he had been for the rest of his life. And what made matters worse is in December, he was in this car accident with his girlfriend, and, the crash, it worsened his regular hip pain to the point it became an insomniac.
My goodness.
And so, I know, and so, you know, it was very, very tragic, you know. He was just not able to take the pain anymore. He 2 days after the accident, he asked his girlfriend to go home early. You know, he had prepared a bunch of goodbye cards, you know, to send out to his friends and stuff. And basically he left his will there for his neighbor to find, and he put a shotgun in his mouth.
My God.
Yeah, yeah, and so... obviously, you know, I was devastated when I heard that news. I was the one who actually announced his death publicly. And, it was very, very, very upsetting for me.
Wow.
What came upsetting even more was when propagandists, they began releasing videos basically celebrating his death, you know, putting words in his mouth and stuff like that, alleging that he thought dinosaurs coexisted with humans and such bullshit like that. You know, basically, you know, it's bad enough that you attack some guy who's dead and no longer able to defend themselves. It's, you know, but they're just treating it like it's a celebration and stuff.
Yeah, that's disgusting. No matter, you know, if you disagree with the guy, that's one thing. But, well, as I said, this is a very vitriolic debate. I mean, it is.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't see this with Bigfoot or even with UFOs anymore. I mean, you just don't, or, you know, maybe with the 9/11 thing, but even then, it's not as just vicious on both sides of the equation. You know, it's runs very deep, and you wonder why that is. I mean, do you have an opinion on why people are so passionate one way or the other about this moon hoax or the moon landing, you know, concept?
Oh, well, as you probably might be aware, there are a lot of Americans. They consider the alleged first landing on the moon as a source of national pride. Like, oh, look at it. This is our greatest achievement. It's always ever going to be the biggest thing we've ever done. You know, it's never going to be topped by anyone and stuff. But you know, some people might be hurt by the fact that okay, this didn't really happen. It was just a propaganda hoax. You know, and so. So some people might be very vigilant, you know. Some people, they just don't want to believe the. It's like a kid when they just find out that Santa Claus doesn't exist, you know. When,
yeah.
When they want to deny it. They don't want to believe it or anything like that. But you know, when the facts get, you know, too overwhelming for them to deal with, you know, it just becomes clear that this is all a hoax, you know. And so what they've been praising all their life is a lie. And of course, you know, some people they just come to accept that. But then you've got others who know that they're lying, and they just continuously tell bullshit to protect that lie. The guy Phil Plait, for example, he runs the Bad Astronomy website. He constantly put words in Bill Casing's mouth, like alleging that he believed all space travel in general was impossible. Bill Casing made no such statements, and in fact, in the very same interview that Plait often referred to, okay, Casing explicitly said that possibly the unmanned surveyor did land on the moon. That counts as space travel, doesn't it?
That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, exactly. So Plait, he's just lying there. And in fact, I actually went to TAMA just last year, you know, the amazing meeting, this James Randi convention thing where Plait was appearing. You know, basically tried to, I went there to question Plait about a few things. One of them was the fact that he has constantly put words in Bill Casing's mouth. And, basically I encounter him. He tells me to go schedule an interview and stuff. You know, it was like they got some press guys organizing interviews and stuff. I go walking around the place for about an hour or so. I can't find anyone. I can't find the press agent. I meet him again just during the break to question him about Operation Dirty Trick, which was an idea to blame Cuba for the death of John Glenn if he died in space. And yet he claims the idea that NASA murdered the Apollo 1 crew is a loathsome accusation. And well, how do you explain Operation Dirty Trick then? I showed him the document. At first he claimed he didn't know about it, when I've been sending him emails about it that he constantly ignored. He says, oh, I say, you have any comment on this? And he says, nope, never heard of it. And I say, you never heard of it? I've sent you emails about this. And he says, I tend not to comment on that because the evidence that we went to the moon is overwhelming. Now he admits that he's seen it, right? And but you know the question was about whether or not the government was willing to let John Glenn die. I didn't even mention the moon in the when I showed him the document. You know, I was just, you know, showing him the evidence that NASA and the government was willing to let one of their astronauts die. But anyways, he tells me again to go schedule an interview with someone. Okay, go find the press agent. And you know, so I finally went back to reception again. Right, this time it was only luck that the press agent was in the other room. You know, he managed to schedule a 15-minute one-on-one interview with Plait. And so I was going to interview him after the speech that he was going to give. And in the meantime, Adam Savage was also giving a speech. You know, Adam Savage from the Mythbusters.
Go ahead, but let me jump in here and give you props before we get into the Mythbusters part, because, I mean, first of all, I think almost you're underselling it a little bit here, because you flew all the way from Australia to Las Vegas to confront these guys about the propaganda, as you call it, alleging that the moon landing was correct. So, I mean, kudos to you for having the balls and the wherewithal and the drive, I guess you could say, to fly all the way across the planet in the name of this theory. Don't sell yourself short there. And you really took it to the Mythbusters guys there. So talk about that. Sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to give you praise here for, a lot of people, it's easy to sit around and do things and not actually do the heavy lifting. But as I said, you're flying all the way across the planet to take this issue right to the folks who are alleging that the moon landing happened. So what happened when you confronted this savage character from Mythbusters?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that I didn't go there primarily for the encountering the propagandist. I also went there to pay my respects to Bill Kaysing. You know, his ashes were scattered in Santa Barbara, and I went there to pay my respects there, with his daughter and stuff.
Okay.
But when I went to Tamay, basically, Savage, he was giving his speech, and when it was done, there was this Q&A session, and basically he says, "Now, if anyone has any things that I screwed up on the show that they want to talk about, just raise your hand." I'm saying he didn't ask for it. So basically I raised my hand and I pointed out that his moon hoax show was built on botched experiments, like when they were doing the wire jumping, the slow motion stuff. The conspiracy theory is that the slow motion, the low gravity footage on the moon, in the moonwalk videos and stuff, that was done by suspending the astronauts via wires, wandering around on this moon set, and then they slowed that footage of them on wires down to 67%, right? And originally we thought it was 50%, but it turned out to be 67%. Okay, everyone makes mistakes now and then, but I informed that we correct them and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways, the idea is that they were filmed on wires, and the footage of them on wires was slowed down, right? But they shot the two heads of fakery separately. They shot Adam Savage running around without a wire in slow motion, right? And then they shot him at full speed, suspended by a wire, jumping up and down. So obviously they're not going to get the results that match up with the Apollo footage. And the ironic thing is that if you actually take the footage of him on the wire and slow it down and then play it alongside the original Apollo 16 footage, you get a near-perfect synchronization.
Exactly.
I raised that point to him, right? And he was like, I hadn't thought of that. So look, what we do isn't science. We're just an entertainment show. Just an entertainment show. We shouldn't be considered the definitive de facto place for the scientific analysis of the moon landings. That's a pretty big shocker, considering that how they constantly gloated how everything was busted.
Well, skeptics across the board have a very pernicious way about them, a very smarmy sort of superiority complex that I find to be very off-putting.
Yeah. And after that Q&A session, everyone at the conference was talking about it, texting people about it and, putting up blogs about it and stuff. Oh, did he fly all the way from Australia just to say that? Oh, hey, where did this guy come here? They just weren't expecting me to come there. Now, I was expecting people to be hostile, but then there was actually people who actually came down and congratulated me, saying, "Hey, man, you flew all the way from Australia, just to come out and point out, say that to these guys and stuff." And so basically they gave me kudos for that, and that was a bit of a surprise. But Phil Plait, after the Q&A session, even though an interview was scheduled, right, he refused, saying that I wouldn't believe anything he'd say, so I'm not going to do an interview with you.
So he wasn't even willing to have a dialogue with you about all this.
It's kind of ironic because he will go on a national radio show with Joe Rogan, debating the Apollo missions, yet he won't do any one-on-one interview with me over claiming that I wouldn't believe anything he'd say. Which is kind of ironic because, there is one thing I do agree with him on. He says, if you were standing on the moon, you would indeed see the stars, even during the day. And yet Neil Armstrong comes back and he says, "Oh, I couldn't see the stars from the lunar surface during the daytime and stuff."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he not acknowledge that whole thing? Does he just not even say anything about the Neil Armstrong part?
He just gives you the silent treatment. Whenever you press fill play, it just gives you the silent treatment. That's the way it goes.
Yeah,
so as I was saying earlier, you see, like, when Ray committed suicide and stuff, you know, there was a whole lot of new material that was popping up out of the woodwork, you know, like the LRO photos, the Dutch moon rock, the fact that the Dutch moon rock turned out to be petrified wood, that one, the missing moonwalk videos turned out to be erased, you know, wiped over, taped over and stuff. This was all this new stuff that I had planned on addressing and stuff. But of course, first I had to fly over to New Jersey, you know, to attend Rene's funeral and stuff. You know, he requested that his ashes be scattered. But during my absence, the incident has turned into Attack of the Trolls, which left me with more propagandist rubbish to clear up afterwards and stuff that just pushed my coverage of the current affairs even further back. But I'm proud to say that I've made it through the storm, and I've got a new series coming up. I've got a new website coming up. It's going to be quite a show, I can promise you that.
Well, good, because I want to see more from you. I think you're doing fantastic work, even though I'm still on the fence about the moon hoax theory. I'm of the opinion. I'll give you sort of my take on this, and, you know, you can feel free to, you know, talk to me about it, I guess you could say. Well, I'm not interested in sort of like rehashing the whole moon hoax debate, because everybody sort of heard both sides of the arguments, I think, or at least people in the paranormal community have. And they've made up their mind one way or the other, or they're on the fence about it. But I think that the moon hoax theory is sort of just like a smoke and mirrors trick to keep people from looking at the UFO phenomenon. That's my opinion. I think that it's sort of like, I think that something to use the phrase apparently that was passed down and used in the community, something funny happened on the way to the moon, but it was UFOs. It wasn't the impossibility of getting there.
Yeah, I tend to encounter a lot of UFO people. I don't delve into the UFO subject, specifically, Frank. But
that's
interesting
fine.
To note is that one of the Apollo astronauts there, he's actually a big proponent of UFOs, Edgar Mitchell from Apollo 14.
Right.
You know, he constantly comes out saying that that they're hiding something. The U.S. government is hiding something. You know, the existence of UFOs, the Roswell thing, or whatever and stuff. You know, personally. Perfectly frank, I think he's just trying to divert attention away from the real issue, which is the fact that that his Apollo 14 mission was a hoax, as were all the other Apollo moon missions.
So we almost have we have almost competing ideas, but at the same time, or conflicting ideas, but at the same time, we agree that something fishy happened. We can agree on that, right?
Yeah. Yes, sure. Sure.
I just don't think, I guess to sort of put my skeptic hat on, I just don't know if you could manage to orchestrate that much of a cover-up, to cover up and fake all those different moon landings. I mean, how many were there, like seven or something like that?
Well, there was six moon landings, and there was three orbital flights, you know, like there was the Apollo 8, which was an orbital flight with just the CSM, that's basically the mothership. You got another one, there was Apollo 10, which had the edited telecasters I was telling you about, which was the lunar module and the command module. Basically, they were just flying it around the moon without landing it. You know, they're just flying this thing out, see how they could handle it.
Exactly.
And then there was Armstrong's mission, right, and a few other missions. There was going to be Apollo 13 as well, which was supposed to be the third moon landing and stuff, but then there was that alleged oxygen tank explosion, you know, which what you might have seen that film with Tom Hanks. But just getting back to what you're saying about how could they have faked all of this stuff, one of the things that you constantly get in debate is, like, how could so many people have been kept quiet about this? How could they have kept this under wraps? Well, the truth of the matter is that secrets involving thousands and thousands of people can and have been covered up for decades. Some people, you might not have heard about this, but there was the Soviet N1 program?
No. But I've heard the argument you're using in favor of UFOs. Yeah. So I mean, we're of the same mindset. You know what I mean? I see your point of view that you know, the atomic bomb was this massive, coordinated, secret project that nobody knew about until we dropped the bomb on Japan. So it's the same sort of idea, right?
Well, that's another example of secrets being kept under wraps. But what I'm talking about is the N1 program, which was basically the Soviet equivalent of the Apollo program. They were building their own Saturn-sized moon rocket and stuff. But they had two secret moon projects: the N1 program, which was basically their their equivalent of the Apollo Saturn V, the equivalent of the Apollo CSM, the Apollo Lunar Module and stuff. There was just a two-man mission. There was a bit of a difference in there and stuff. But then they also had the Proton, the Zonda program, which was basically to put a stripped-down Soyuz atop a Proton rocket, launch that to the moon, fly it around there, and then come back again and stuff. You know, but they were constantly reluctant to use that sort of stuff because, like, in the beginning, they told Sir Bernard Lavelle, the British astronomer, that they had to postpone moon flights indefinitely because of the radiation encountered on the way there and stuff. And so, even though the N1 was a complete failure, but the Zond was somewhat proven and stuff. They sent one capsule around the moon and back again and stuff. Now, a lot of people cite this mission, the Zond 5, because it actually carried turtles around. They say, oh, well, if turtles can survive the radiation, then so can humans. But turtles, they're much more resistant to radiation than humans are. You know, like a human can take a 500 rem, which is the dose, basically how much radiation a person can take before they die. You know, and whereas a turtle can take like 15,000 or 60,000 or something like that. You know, so you know it's apples and oranges trying to compare the two.
Exactly. Anyway, you couldn't jump off the Brooklyn Bridge, but I bet if he threw a turtle off, I bet he'd live.
Yeah. The whole idea is that after the N1 was a failure, right? The Soviets, this involved thousands and thousands of scientists and engineers. They had four different rocket launchers, these Saturn-sized rockets, so each one of them blew up. And after the failure of the N1, they completely kept it secret for 30 years. It was only revealed after the Soviet Union collapsed. And so, if they're equivalent to the Apollo program, you know, its very existence can be kept under wraps this whole time. You know, I fail to see how the Americans would have been unable to cover up a conspiracy behind their own moon program. In fact, some people on the internet actually call the N1 program the real moon landing hoax. You know, people who still believe Apollo might and stuff, they call that the real moon landing hoax because, like, the Russians, they perpetrated a hoax by claiming they'd never been in the race to begin with. They say, oh, we never had this moon program. We never had any plans to use anything like that, but they had covered this thing up, and that involved thousands of people, you know, and so if the Soviets can do it, then so can the Americans. So that's the reason why there was so many people involved. How could they keep it? This is the reason why that claim is by propagandists is bunk. No, but even so, then you got to remember too is that not everyone at NASA would have been needed to be in on the conspiracy. Like the technicians at Houston, as I was saying earlier, they simply read what's on their computer screens, right, and wouldn't need to know or care where the videos or the data and stuff came from.
Right.
And who were they receiving it from? They're receiving it from the NASA Manned Spaceflight Network, which was basically this facility of NASA-owned or NASA-contracted facilities, supposedly receiving these signals from space, you know, and, supposedly from the moon. It was like there's some missions stayed in Earth orbit, others probably never even left the ground, you know, right? But the point is, right, that all the manned spaceflight network would need to do is relay all this information over the landlines, and then, you know, the guys at Houston would just say, okay, this came from the moon. You know, it's as simple as that, really. So they wouldn't need to know about the conspiracy. So,
okay.
You got to remember all those issues when people come back and say, "Oh, well, there were so many people involved in Apollo." It's not. There's people who don't need to know about it, and there's facts that conspiracies involving a small number of people can be covered up. So that's just the way things are, really.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I totally see your point of view. I'm still open-minded, I guess. I guess you could say to the idea that I just feel like they would make a lot of mistakes, but I guess that's what you guys are doing in the moon hoax theory community is sort of picking up on these mistakes that continually seem to surface in the story.
Yeah, exactly. There's photographic anomalies like the lighting being off, like when Aldrin walks down into the lunar module shadow, he appears lit up, and the propagandists, they say, oh, it's light bouncing off the surface. Well, if you actually consider how bright that thing is, the lunar surface is actually as bright as an asphalt road. Has the same reflectivity and stuff. And I recreated the experiment, you know, using an asphalt road and the sun. You know, I put a model inside a box. You know, the box was to black out the additional light from the blue sky, because the blue sky acts like additional light. There's only one light on the sun, so I can't use the blue sky. Anyway, I did the experiment, and the astronaut came black as pitch, you know, so obviously that reflected light thing doesn't work. And Then you got the fact that recently to settle this, the Americans they sent their lunar reconnaissance orbiter to supposedly send back pictures of the landing site, you know, to try to, obviously the NASA probe, so obviously they would say that, wouldn't they? But if you actually look at the lunar reconnaissance orbiter photographs, you find many more anomalies and stuff. Like before the lunar reconnaissance orbiter came about, they were citing pictures from the Cellini and the Clementine spacecraft, which allegedly show this halo, this bright area that was supposedly disturbance caused by the Apollo 15 engine plume. But when you compare those footage to the newer lunar reconnaissance orbiter photos, you find out that this mysterious halo is just the reflected area of a giant impact crater.
Oh, weird.
So it wasn't caused by the engine exhaust at all. So where's the engine disturbance? You know, if they insisted that it would have been visible from space, well, where is it? There isn't any.
Because they didn't
go to the moon. No, and in fact, if you actually look at the photos, you can see pebbles directly underneath the engine bell. These things would have been blown away by the engine exhaust. You know, just like if you get a leaf blower and stuff, and you blow dust away, it goes away. There's nothing left. Yeah, there's pebbles directly underneath the engine bell and stuff. So it just doesn't make any sense and stuff.
So do you think it's impossible to go to the moon, or you think that, because, you know, eventually we're going to try again, either us or the Chinese or some other country is going to try and make a run for the moon. Do you think it's possible for them to do it? And, you know, if it's another country, are they going to blow the whistle on the moon hoax?
Well, not with 1960s technology, and certainly not with today's technology. You see, as I said, one of the proposals that's been brought up is to use 2 meters of water shielding, you know, to actually shield you against the radiation of solar flares and stuff like that. In fact, one of the shuttle astronauts, James Van Hoften, he and his committee, they actually released a report basically saying that the solar flares and the cosmic rays and so forth were so severe that humans aren't even going to be able to, quote, get back to the moon until we can find better ways of shielding astronauts. He said they'd have to be constantly shielded and stuff, and that even when they're on the moon, a simple moonwalk would have been impossible because of the radiation, because it would be too severe to actually do any, you know, extended EVA activities outside the lunar module. And in fact, he proposed hiding inside a convenient lunar cave to protect you from the radiation. And so, good luck finding one, I guess. But so that's the whole issue. You know, so if we don't have the technology to shield astronauts and to get back to the moon, you know, how did they do it back then? And as far as the other nations, you know, a few people don't seem to realize this, but the truth is it's like a one world space government now, because like every single space agency except for the Chinese, they're all working together on the construction of the International Space Station and various other joint projects with the Americans.
Right.
In fact, all the time. In fact, the Americans are soon going to be using Russian Soyuz capsules just to get to the space station that they've together constructed. And the only competing space nation is the Chinese, which also happens to be America's free trade partner. You know, they're considered America's banker. You know, so I don't think they're going to be blowing the whistle on NASA anytime soon. But it's another funny thing too is that they constantly. You look, every time there's been a proposal for a return to the moon or a mission to Mars or whatever and stuff, it always never seems to be fulfilled. For one convenient reason after another. Like back when Armstrong supposedly landed on the moon, they were talking about sending humans to Mars by 1982.
Yeah, that's the point that I was making earlier, that I find the whole idea of space travel very fishy and suspicious because you know, maybe this is because I was born after the moon landing, or the moon landing hoax, as you see it, that, you know, part of me is very frustrated with NASA in general, because I feel like it doesn't make sense that they would go to the moon and then stop going to the moon, like, in the mid-70s, and it's been over 30 years now, and they haven't even gone back to the moon. That doesn't make sense to me at all. So.
Exactly. So if you can understand, it was a propaganda stunt. They needed to fulfill Kennedy's promise of landing a man on the moon first. Okay, we do that with Apollo 11. Now what? We've completed the objective. There's no more reason to continue to continue with the hoax anymore, but we've got all these other missions. You know, they had plans for manned missions to Mars, Venus, and bases on the moon and stuff like that and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and so they needed a reason to, you know, basically get out of this. And so they had the Apollo 13 thing, which resulted in the cancellation of the Apollo project. You know, all the elaborate plans for space travel were effectively flushed down the toilet after that. No more plans to go back to the moon, no more plans for Mars travel and stuff like that. But if you notice, whenever they need votes or something, a U.S. president tends to propose space travel, you know, to try to boost himself in the opinion polls.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Bush Senior, he proposed his man on Mars he proposed a return to the moon by 1999, I think it was. That didn't happen about. Then Bush Junior, he proposes men on the moon by 2020. You know, this was in the height of the war on terror, the Iraq war and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then Obama comes along and says, oh, we've cancelled it because it's too expensive. Well, you've just spent, if I can use the numbers here, right, as of 2010, right, the Constellation program cost about $9 billion, right, and the proposal was about half the cost of the first one, which was $135 billion, and they were aiming to expend $67 billion on them. So far, they've only spent $9 billion on it, and say, hang on, now it's too expensive. But now Obama, now he's proposing, you know, because he was getting his ass kicked in the opinion polls, because now there's a whole lot of Americans who are going to be losing their jobs and stuff, you know, because, like, okay, now we've canceled the shuttle. And at the moment, they don't have any launch vehicles and stuff. They're still designing the Orion capsule, but they don't have any rocket to launch it with now that the thing was canceled and stuff. But then Obama suddenly, just months after he proposes canceling the return to the moon, he proposes, okay, we're going to skip the moon and head off to the asteroids and Mars. We should have a mission around Mars by the mid-1930s. It's ridiculous how they keep constantly pushing the date so far ahead into the future. You know, if you're going to do it with the 1960s technology, then what's stopping you? You know, it didn't take you that long to build this rocket that supposedly took you to the moon. You know, so what's taking you so long building this thing to get back there or to go onto Mars? You know, at this rate, they might as well say we'll be back on the moon by 2100.
Right.
You know, even if it didn't happen, we'd all be dead. We wouldn't know. Better it to be a mystery than to be wrong.
That's true. You're tapping into my frustration here with NASA. I'm very upset with them, and I'm very frustrated with the whole organization, whether or not they, you know, whether or not they hoaxed the moon landing or whether or not they're able to get there. The whole thing seems illogical to me that this, you know, concept or field of space travel is stalled out so much. I mean, I'm tired of looking at the pictures. I'm tired of looking at pictures of stars and everything else. It's time to go. It's time to move, baby. It's time to get on the ship and start flying. You know what I mean?
You've got to realize one thing. Even if it was real, even if the moon landing was real, you've got to admit that this is a huge step backwards from, first we were landing men on the moon, supposedly. Now suddenly we go back to Earth orbit flights.
Exactly. And that's what I'm talking
about. Some people have even commented on how this whole new proposal seems like a step back from the shuttle itself is a poor design. I acknowledge that, but most people think that a space plane was superior to capsules. You know, first they were using capsules, and now they went over to space planes. Now they've gone back to capsules again and stuff. And so that's another step backwards when you think of it. Of course, the shuttle was a terrible design and stuff. You know, if they can design a better space plane, for sure. You know, but you know that's. It's just a whole huge step. And now they're going to be reliant on the Russians just to get to their own space station. Who really won the space race now makes you wonder. You know, I would have thought that the leaders in the space nation would have been taking the Russians there, but no, now it's the other way around and stuff.
It's so true, my friend. You know, it's supposed to be the best and the brightest down there at NASA, but it doesn't seem like they know what the fuck they're doing. That's the frustrating part, you know. Anyway, so...
Yeah.
This moon hoax theory, though, it's sort of been pigeonholed in the world of the paranormal as sort of like the bastard son of the esoteric, if you will. You know, it seems to get beyond the vitriol on both sides. There seems to be a heavy ridicule factor against the moon hoax theory. And you know, before I get your take on that, I will say that I'm constantly amazed and surprised by the prominent people that I meet and talk to in this field of the paranormal and general people in the mainstream who do give credence to the moon hoax theory. So just because it's heavily ridiculed by the media doesn't mean there aren't a lot of people who believe in it, not just, serious researchers like you, but everyday people out there who've given it some thought and are on board with the moon hoax theory. But my question for you is, as the grandson of moon hoax theory, how do you feel about, the very difficult public perception that moon hoax theory research has?
Well, it's a tough drawback, and that's all I can really say, is because, I try to educate people. I try to get the message out, and what I get in return is bullshit from propagandists. Most of the time, sticks and stones most of the time, but then they start resorting to putting words in your mouth and libeling about you on the internet and stuff. It just, at times it tends to grab on you, at times you can ignore it and stuff, but the problem is ignoring the propaganda won't make it go away. This is where it becomes sort of a no-win situation, because if you just ignore the propaganda, you then get accused of running from their version of the truth. But then again, if you actually address their propaganda and point out why it is propaganda, why they're wrong and I'm right and stuff, you unwittingly give them undeserved attention, and it distracts you from the current issues.
Right.
The current issues. And even after, you knock them down, there's always going to be their fellow trolls and adoring fans to pat them on the back and give undeserved praise, even after they've been debunked six ways to Sunday. So in the end, it seems like almost like a no-win situation. That's the unfortunate factor. But I remain confident that these guys are not going to deter me from completing my objective, and that's proving beyond a shadow of a doubt that the moon missions were faked. And it's an ongoing battle to the finish, I guess. And I'm going to continue doing it until I either die or NASA publicly acknowledges that the moon missions were faked. And as a matter of fact, I'm actually started, because one of the things that these guys often like to allege, the propagandists, they like to allege, oh, he wouldn't believe that the moon missions were real if he was flown to the moon himself and shown the artifacts supposedly sitting on the surface. Well, I began a fundraise. flyjarrettothemoon@gmail.com, which is basically this PayPal account for people to send in donations. You see, the private organization Space Adventures, you might have heard about them, they said they sent tourists aboard the International Space Station and now offering tourists the flight around the moon aboard the Soyuz for $100 million per seat. You'd think that if they can send them around the moon, they would have, at least field tested it themselves before they offer it to tourists. But no, we end up the tourists now, okay? Well, what I've done is I've started up this fundraise, to try to raise $200 million. Half for my ticket, half for one of the propagandist tickets. I'm trying to find out how many propagandists are willing to make good on that claim that, I'd be unconvinced that the moon missions were real if I was flown there myself and shown the artifacts, This is not also to see if the radiation, firsthand, whether or not the radiation is survivable, which I know it isn't, And so I know that if I do hit the 200 million and go on this thing, I won't be coming back. But, it would be beneficial to both sides of the fence, because we'll have this, firsthand and proof whether or not the radiation is survivable. If I come back dead or dying and stuff, then you'll know that it was a hazard for astronauts. And by any off chance, if I somehow do manage to survive the radiation, there'll be an opportunity to inspect the landing site, firsthand, see if anything is there, I've stated that I would accept a view through a ground-based telescope as proof, but even though we have telescopes like that, like the very large telescope in Chile, it has an angular resolution capable of seeing the artifacts, yet I haven't been able to find it yet. And so I would also accept, first-hand and flight around the moon if I'm somehow able to survive the radiation line. And so what I've got is I've got this fundraiser going to see if any of the propagandists are willing to make good on that claim that I'd be unconvinced if I was shown the artifacts myself. Phil Plaidy in particular, he constantly alleges that, oh, if you showed them the artifacts, if you flew them to the moon and said, oh, they'd probably say that you drugged them or something. Okay, well, prove it then, okay? Here's the fundraiser, you submit the money, prove it. Let's see if I can survive, and let's see if what you say about me is true, But so far, as far as I can tell, the vast majority of donors has been people who know that I'm gonna be dying from this. People who know that I'm gonna come back dead.
What do you
if the capsule ever does come back?
What do you mean they're donating so you'll die?
All the people who have donated are people who know that I'm gonna die, but they realize that what my noble cause is. It's a fight for the truth.
All right. Yes. I thought you meant like all of Phil Plait's fans are donating so you'll die when you go up there and they don't have to fight with you anymore. I was kind of making a joke.
That would be beneficial for them, I guess, but the people who have contributed to this fundraiser are people who are my fellow conspiracy theorists, people who some of them don't want to donate because they know I'm going to die, but others do because they realize this is my duty. You know, they realize this is I've made it my mission to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the moon missions are fake. You know, get to the truth. Okay. If I survive, okay, I'll acknowledge, I guess, that maybe I was wrong, I guess. But if I die, if I come back dead and dying and stuff, dead or dying, I should say, you know, then we know that, okay, I was right. You know, I am not afraid to die for the sake of the truth. And if I have to put my life on the line just to get to the truth, then so be it.
I like that passion.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Are there any myths that you'd like to test but can't?
Well, we did a whole episode on busting the conspiracy theory that the moon landing was faked. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who are still unconvinced. So we would love to, if time, money were no object, build a spaceship, go to the moon, and come back with a piece of Apollo hardware.
Oh, that would be cool.
All in one take.
That would be cool. That would be cool. Well, can't you get a telescope strong enough to see the Apollo stuff on the moon?
We researched it, and no, not even the Hubble can resolve the images of the moon to tight enough resolution to see actual, like, footprints or pieces of Apollo hardware.
Would you be open to the idea that it didn't happen? Or do you want to prove it? See?
No.
What would See?
In this, I have to admit to some bias that we've already been there. I believe absolutely, unequivocally, that of course we went there.
Well,
so
then you're unqualified to have the tests. How do I know you're not going to bring a piece of equipment up there? I can't trust you now. You're like evolutionary scientists. They'll do anything to prove that it's real.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.